Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
What's up, brother? Tuesday. Chuck and Chernoff are on the Fan. Thanks for making us a part of your afternoon drive. We're going to walk you right up till 680 game day. And then it's the Ford Leadoff Show before the Braves and the Astros play game two of their three-game series. Raylo gets the ball for the Braves. Ronaldo Lopez tonight. Hunter Brown for the Astros again. 810 on the Fan and the Fan mobile app. One note before we get into some stuff from last night. The Braves have placed Ozzie Albies on the 10-day IL with a fractured big toe, which sounds awful. He stayed in the game last night, remember, after he got hit, ran the bases, played defense. So, I mean, toes are a tricky thing, but I wouldn't be super concerned that this is a long-term thing. Let's see, it's a couple of weeks. So, in the meantime, the Braves will bring up David Fletcher. Tonight, Luis Guillorme will be in the lineup at second base. And Michael Harris moves up to the two spot, as you would expect after Ronald Acuna. Now, the Braves in their first game back in Houston, since they won the championship 3 years ago. It had been 895 days since the Braves clinched on that field in that 7-0 win back on November 2nd, 2021. Last night, they won 6-1 in a very different kind of a game. Now, along the way, they improved to 10-5, 3-1 on their road trip, but it was a low-scoring bullpen, good enough job by Darius Vines and Charles. That's where we should start. Vines, who made his first start in 11 days. You saw some of that rust early in the first inning, but to his credit, he limited the damage to one run. He got a double play off Yordan Alvarez's bat, and it was all said and done. He went 4 2/3, gave up 4 hits and a run. Snit talked about it postgame. They had to be thrilled.
They really were, and it wasn't perfect, and it wasn't easy, and it was a guy who was facing a really good lineup, and you could kind of see that. Like I said, we were talking earlier, he didn't even qualify for the win. When I say he didn't even, but he did everything you needed last night. You got to a deep pen, and you got, by the way, what's a day game tomorrow and then off on Thursday, so yep. You pitch who you pitch tonight and tomorrow maybe. And so a deep pen that hasn't been performing well, and you gave him a chance last night. And the pen to me was as much of a story following up Vines as Vines coming off, not even off the bench, coming out of AAA and doing his job.
So the pen last night, 5 1/3 scoreless. And it started with Aaron Bummer, who came in the fifth inning. And you know the Braves wanted to give Vines the shot to get out of the fifth to get the win. But when Alvarez came up and it's a one-run game, you're going to go lefty-lefty there. Then it was Pierce Johnson, A.J. Minter, and they could sit down Raisel Iglesias. While the Braves were sitting their closer down, the Braves' offense was pummeling the Astros' closer and Josh Hader. It was batting practice. Meatballs coming up at 96 miles an hour that the Braves tattooed and turned a 2-1 game into a 6-1 game at that point. I still have just very little fear that this bullpen's not going to be fantastic. There's just too many arms, too much depth, too much righty-lefty, and you saw that on display last night, that in a close game, Snit, I thought, managed it beautifully with how he used his guys, and they held on to the lead before opening it up in that ninth inning. And in the ninth, Marcell Ozuna, a part of the hit parade, gave him a 14-game hitting streak. So he did not hit in the opener. He's hit it 14 straight at this point, so he continues to be red hot. Austin Riley had a 3-hit game. Ronald Acuna had a couple of hits, including a double, a walk, and a run, and the Braves improved to 10-5.
Yeah, and for whatever it's worth, tonight and tomorrow afternoon, what we saw last night from Houston, that's been the story. Now, they shut down a really good lineup. Kudos to everybody, Vines and the four relievers. Kudos to everybody. The starting staff, Arrigetti, this is a little much for him. And then the bullpen just absolutely let it fly out the window. Used Hader three of the last 4 days. Joe Espada's having a time right now replacing Dusty.
He is. I mean, the difference in the two teams, I mean, the Braves are deeper in a lot of ways. Yep. Like, Houston's dealing with injuries, too. They're without Verlander. They're without Framber Valdez.
But they played sloppy, too, last night. They
played sloppy. The defense is – but their pitching stinks, right? Yes. The Braves lose Strider.
Yep.
Think where we are in 15 games. The Braves have lost Strider. They've yet to have Sean Murphy at one at bat. Anyone out, now they've lost Ozzie Albies. But the depth the Braves have compared to a talented team like Houston, it's night and day that they lose a couple of pieces – and that team looks dreadful right now. They might turn it around when they get healthy, and Verlander could be back. But that roster is currently constructed. Houston doesn't look anything like a playoff team like you see with the Braves.
Yeah, and Hunter Brown going tonight, he may not be the rescue that Houston wants.
He has not performed well. Couldn't get out of the first in his last start. He's pitched 3 2/3 in his last couple. So hopefully the Braves can get to him early tonight. Speaking of tonight, the NBA's play-in tournament begins with two Western Conference games. Lakers and Pelicans at 7:30, Warriors and Kings, that's a 10 o'clock start. And that game has a little kind of a subplot for Hawks fans that you want the Kings to win their two play-in games so they get to the playoffs. If that happens, the Hawks get their draft pick as a part of the Kevin Huerter trade. So a little something to watch there. Now, Sacramento is just all in still on that team. If you want to know the excitement level, these are the get-in prices. I saw these on the Game Time app this morning for the NBA play-in. $212 to get in to watch the Kings and the Warriors tonight in a play-in. Whereas, let's say Hawks-Bulls, for instance, tomorrow night in Chicago, $58 is the get-in. Heat-Sixers tomorrow night's only $50 get-in. And Lakers-Pelicans, our friends in New Orleans aren't exactly clamoring for this. $39 will get you in the door to see the play-in action tonight in New Orleans.
I don't understand how that's possible. Like, is the whole city out of work? Like, this is a sort of a playoff game for a franchise that hadn't had a whole lot of them.
You're not wrong, but the secondary market
is... LeBron's there, isn't he?
He is there.
AD?
Yep.
Wow.
Not a great indicator. Now, you can save your money if you don't want to fly to Chicago tomorrow night. You don't want to do that. What you can do is head right downtown. The Hawks have a play-in watch party at State Farm that's only $5. Now, you do have to pay for parking, and you have to pay for food, and you don't really get to see the game because you're watching on TV, but... for $5, you can be in the building like Jack, our intern, who will be there tomorrow. Now, Cullen Madden and Brian Gephardt, producer extraordinaires, have you given Jack his assignment that we need some audio, we need some video, we need some on-site Cub reporting from Jack, the intern? Is he prepared for this tomorrow night?
We're trying to work out the details. It's hard to just be like, hey, go down there and crap on him and come back to us.
No, we don't want to crap on him.
No, I want sound. I want a feel. You know, like when you go to, for instance, the Star Wars movie premiere at 11:58 before the line opens at midnight. Like, you want just the feel of the crowd there. It's not to mock or make fun or point or anything.
No. We want him to talk to the two or three fans that are there. Maybe there'll be a big crowd. I've said this before. Hawks fans are so loyal, considering the franchise has never really repaid them in success. So maybe there will be some people there. We'll see what maybe they interview Harry the Hawk. Maybe we get Skyhawk. There could be all kinds of great content we get out of this tomorrow night, the big play-in watch party down at State Farm Arena. So we'll cross our fingers for that. I know that everybody is counting down to the NFL draft. 9 days and counting till we're live at Harris Cherokee. We will be on the air live at the beginning of the draft up until the Falcons pick. So our draft spectacular, you can look forward to Chuck and Chernoff with front office Los Carlos Medina. Next Thursday night, 8 o'clock, live at Harris Cherokee in Cherokee, North Carolina. I saw a number that should make me feel comfortable as a Falcon fan. While schedules have not been released yet, and we'll find them out a couple of weeks after the draft, we know the schedule strength of each team, and these are the five easiest schedules on paper heading into the 2024 season. The fifth easiest schedule, the Saints. The fourth easiest belongs to the Jets. The third easiest schedule belongs to the Bears. Second to the Chargers. And yes, your Atlanta Falcons on paper have the easiest strength of schedule in the National Football League. Let's go.
Based on last year's schedule and the fact that obviously we know about the division, I'm just wondering how Tampa didn't have an easier schedule based on the fact that, well, they got a first-place schedule, I guess.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. There's the difference. So the Falcons have the third-place schedule. The Saints had the second-place schedule. And for whatever reason, the way the Panthers set up, statistically, it was more difficult. Again, these never end up working out
exactly the way
you
like
want.
I said, based on last year's schedule and or last year's records, which includes Carolina, but they beat you. So,
well, that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
So getting Kirk Cousins should be the difference, and this is what the Falcons are thinking. Well, we have Kirk. What happened to us against Carolina? What happened to us in Tennessee against Will Levis? Or at home against Joshua Dobbs and the Vikings? What happened to us in Arizona against Kyler Murray? That's going to not be the case because we have Kirk. And that might be true. But keep in mind, there are a lot of those games where the Falcons had the lead at the end. And the defense just finally buckled. It happened against the Vikings. It happened against Arizona. It happened against Washington. Like, it happened in a bunch of games where they just, I mean, the defense couldn't hold up. And you were asking a lot of that group. And they held their own for the longest while and just finally buckled. So this year, I've broken the schedule down into two different groupings. The group of you better take care of business group, when the Falcons play Carolina twice, the Raiders, Giants, Commanders, Vikings, and Broncos. Of that group, I can't give you a quarterback that scares me. Some of those teams are in rebuild mode. Some of those teams are in just disarray. You've got to win 5 of the 7 games there. You just have to. And that's, I'm paying Kirk Cousins the money to make sure I don't lose to those teams. So I go 5-2 if that's, you know, the top end. The other 10 games are the ones I want to split. And that's the part of the schedule that's more daunting. Tampa twice, who, whatever you want to say about them, they won the division. Saints twice, they had a better record and they were over 500. Then the Chiefs, Eagles, Cowboys, and Steelers, who were all playoff teams. And then the Chargers and Seahawks, who have new head coaches, but again, will not be easy. Can they split those 10 games by going 5-5? If they do that, that would get them to the 10 wins, the playoff berth, and potentially the division championship. Do I have confidence in that? Not necessarily, but that's how the math works.
Yeah, and boy, you talk about some wild card scenarios there. I love the fact that you got Justin Herbert. Well, what about a new head coach? How's that going to go the second time around? I think I know how it's going to go with the Chargers. I think it's going to go really well. The guy wins, like, everywhere. But it's still a wild card. So much of that is hard to predict. But you're right to have them in that second group of teams.
So, again, that's the Kirk Cousins factor in it. We'll get the schedule. I believe it's a couple of weeks after the draft. So we'll know what that's going to look like. How many? If you're a betting man, what is the primetime number for the Falcons?
2.5.
You over or under it?
Under. I think you get 2.
I will bet the over.
Can I say that Brazil thing? I was intrigued for a second thinking about the Falcons, and then that didn't happen. So
no. I will take the over. I think they will get. The Viking game will be in primetime, I have to believe. Right? I just think the league will want to do the Kirk Cousins going back there story. I would think one of the division games, maybe the Saints-Falcons, finds its way back into a Thursday night Amazon something. And then there's just too many other potentials. A Chiefs matchup, a Cowboys game, an Eagles game, that they wouldn't get one of those to be the third.
Plus, if they get the college football playoff to back off some of their December plans or maybe some additional. Remember, their schedule's not even set yet, the NFL.
No.
Yeah.
Did anybody dig into the WNBA draft? And I never thought I would ask that question on the show before.
I did see Caitlin standing on stage and the commissioner, and they were holding up the jersey. I saw all of that. Yep.
So the viewership was pretty good last night. The WNBA draft did 2.4 million viewers, a 300% increase from the all-time high, which was 572,000 a year ago. So that was the Caitlin Clark factor, but it was also like you did know some of the other names. You knew Angel Reese, and you knew Cardoso, and you knew a few of the names that you saw play in the NCAA tournament. So at least it was on the radar, and the Indiana Fever thing is hilarious. They sold out 17,000 last night for their watch party for the draft.
Uh-huh.
They had a full arena to watch a name being read off a card and then Caitlin Clark stand up and walk up on stage. They are going crazy right now. What has happened in the WNBA is like something they could have never imagined, dreamed, predicted because of the Caitlin Clark phenomenon. In the last month, and Front Office Sports chronicled this, the WNBA has seen the draft sell out in person in minutes. Prices soar to a level that a team has never seen, and that's the Indiana Fever. One team, the Las Vegas Aces, have moved their game to a larger arena. One team has put a Rook versus the Goat campaign together and sold out their arena. And the WNBA commissioner said he hopes to double the media rights because of Caitlin Clark. It's hilarious. Good for them. That is a world that I would have never, ever predicted
you
that
wonder,
we would have seen coming.
Does she join the Players Association? Like, isn't that the whole thing about women's sports? Like, a big part of it is solidarity, all over one and all that. Like, she's the Barry Bonds of this thing. What'd Barry do? He withdrew from the Players Association so he could not have to share with everybody.
Yeah, so congrats.
Like, she's, if they just said she's toting the freight in literally every city, it's the Caitlin Clark show. That's going to be an interesting, because she's paying everybody's bills.
I want to see what Atlanta does when she comes into town here, and if the Caitlin Clark fever.
This is Billie Jean King, women's tennis in the 70s. It's like that same sort of thing. That, I mean, the talent had been there, but nobody was paying attention to it. And then because of this one person, everybody starts paying attention. Like, there are these marks in time. And the I mean, this is just so clear cut why all this white hot attention.
You need to go help your buddy, Jontay Porter. Story came out a month or two ago. Jontay might have been messing with the lines on his daily fantasy numbers by just literally ignoring grabbing rebounds. If the number was 4.5, he would, like, run away from the rebound. Well, by the way, this is Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, Jontay Porter, who plays for the Raptors.
Played.
Good, thank you. Played for the Raptors. Well, now the news comes out, according to the Action Network, that Porter owned and operated a VIP account at FanDuel in Colorado that wagered millions in total from 2021 to 2023. He allegedly placed over 1,000 wagers at the sports book. A source said, quote, he was firing all the time. What are you doing?
Couldn't get enough of himself. He had some inside info. He bet on himself, yes.
What are you doing, Jontay?
Trying to pick up a few extra bucks.
Matt is here as your proxy. I've told you this over and over. He signed up not just for an account using his name. He had a VIP account. Hey, FanDuel, did you think you might want to tip off somebody with the league? I think that's part of the agreement with some of this stuff, that if you have a red flag or a player who's got an account, you're supposed to say something.
Yeah, if there's a whale on the site, you need to know who he is. I mean, how can you afford all this while playing in the NBA? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
The guy, I don't know what Jontay Porter makes, but him wagering millions of dollars, he doesn't have that to spend.
Well, no, I mean, how much of a gamble is it if you bet $2,000 on yourself to be under 4.5 assists, and when you get to 4, suddenly the ball's covered with spikes?
You're not wrong in that respect, but the problem is you just don't bet on yourself. You start betting other things. You start getting the compulsion of, this is fun, so now I'm gonna bet baseball, I'm going to bet football, I'm going to do it all.
I want to give Jontay, I want to give this one person credit. You really did have Gray Sports Almanac. It was you. You were betting on you. He had to win, didn't he?
I'm going to guess no. I'm going to guess he's lost a lot more than he's won. Because, you know, at some point, you are not just betting again on what you know. You start betting on stuff you don't know. That's sort of how we're all built. But we'll see what happens now moving forward if he gets the book, as the sports world says, thrown at him, where he gets a lifetime ban. We didn't mention something the other day. ESPN announced their latest 30 for 30. I don't know if you saw this. They're going to chronicle the life and career of Stuart Scott.
Saw it, yeah.
I just wonder if they're going to tell the real story, though. Like, Stuart Scott, since he's been gone, there's been a lot of love for Stuart. There was a lot of hate. And I worked in this business now a long time, and I used to hear it. People didn't like the Stuart style, the cool is the other side of the pillow stuff, trying too hard. There was even talk at ESPN. There were people that didn't like his style of doing highlights. So I wonder if an ESPN production will actually tell the tale.
All of that is absolutely true. It's a fair observation. And when you pass of cancer and leave behind, was it 2 daughters? At that point, it becomes St. Stuart. I mean, that's just kind of what we do as people normally. And here's the thing. When I don't like your style or your manner or your approach or your delivery, that's different than, like, you punched a lady or dealt drugs or whatever else. And so Stuart, anybody who had pushback or criticism of Stuart, it was usually about a style or delivery. And so that kind of stuff, that's easy to say, dang, he left those girls behind. I'm on Stuart's side.
All right, let's get our worst idea.
Get ready for Chuck and Chernoff's Worst Idea.
We've been taking your worst idea answers at the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Kirk Cousins had tweeted yesterday that he said, I've been here 3 weeks with the Falcons, and it didn't take long for a teammate to stop me in the lunch line and say, quote, I feel like you're giving off some serious dad vibes, Kirk. So I'm curious what gives off dad vibes. Who or what specifically would give off the dad vibes? Now, Fax Sports tweeted me a picture of Jock Peterson. Looks like he's on a private jet, a PJ. He's feeding his baby daughter. with a big smile on his face, and that would certainly be dad vibes. Brad tweets and says, average 20 minutes plus in the bathroom during poo time. It is one of the few places where a guy can get away with kids. You lock the door and you go to the other side of the house and you're gone for about 25 minutes. There's no question. Jimmy said AM radio grandpa vibes. Well, that's us. M said, I literally bought the New Balance shoes for yard work. So you got the newbies. Craig said he's got the dad jokes ready to go. Rob just sent a picture of us.
Me and you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Probably.
That's true. Jack said cargo shorts. Scott went with the shirt in the pool. Joshua went with the cell phone holster. Parker went with the coach's shorts. This is well done. You guys did well. You'll send your answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Who or what gives off the dad vibe? Our next guest does not give up dad vibes. What he does is gives off cool vibes because he pitched in the league. He now covers the Braves. He knows all thing about bullpens. He knows how he wants to see the Braves' offense continue to move forward. We'll attack all the big issues, including the injuries to pitchers, and how we fix the MLB postseason with a fan favorite of yours. Peter Moylan joins us next. Chuck and Chernoff are on the radio. We're actually going to take you up till 6:10 tonight. Then we'll turn things over to the Ford leadoff show, 680 game day. And then first pitch at 8:10 tonight with the Braves and the Astros. Again, have your 680 The Fan mobile app. If you're out and about tonight, just download it and tap the app and take it with you wherever you are headed. Good news for Braves fans, too, all over Georgia. You can now be a part of the Braves 50-50 raffle, whether you're in the ballpark or not. This is all part of the Braves Foundation, and it's presented by Harris Cherokee Casinos for the first time ever. Jackpots will be open during Braves home and road series throughout the season, open to fans who are at the ballpark or listening anywhere in the state of Georgia. Raffles will conclude with one lucky winner taking home 50% of the total jackpot, with the remaining 50% going to the Atlanta Braves Foundation. Here's what you have to do. Either enter in person at Truist Park or online. Reminder, if you enter online, you must be physically located in the state of Georgia at the time of entry. For complete rules and details and to purchase your 50-50 raffle tickets online, go to Braves.com/5050 or visit the MLB Ballpark app while you're in the state of Georgia. Our next guest is a big-time TV star, former Braves pitcher. You see him all throughout the season on Bally Sports. He's our friend, Peter Moylan, who's kind enough to join us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. And not only is he a great guy, he's a swell dresser. Peter, how are you?
I'm a swell dresser. How do you think I am? I'm wonderful.
I mean, I see the fits. I see what's going on TV. You're working hard with the outfits. I see what's happening.
I am trying. I really appreciate that you said working hard instead of trying hard. Let me tell you, there's been some outfits where I've second-guessed my wife coming into it, and I feel pretty good on the way out.
You've done well. Let's start with the bullpen for the Braves. I still think this, when it's all said and done, will be the deepest and the best bullpen in baseball. But there's been some hiccups, which is going to happen along the way. But for Snit, last night's an example, right? I know he wanted to get Darius Vines through the fifth, but because he has so many lefties, he's like, all right, Aaron Bummer, you go deal with Jordan. Later in the game, I can go to AJ. If I want, I can go to Matzik. I've got Dylan Lee as well. That's all from the left side, and then we know what they have on the right side. Like, the depth of this thing, I don't remember it being this deep with so many options for Snit.
Well, that was part of the, you know, obviously that was one of the focuses that Alex had in the offseason, was to lock down our bullpen. But even the way that it's been designed to this point with four lefties, four righties, it's just perfect. The balance that it has, Rysell we've hardly seen, and when we do see him, he's been pretty good. Dylan Lee has been kind of the mop-up guy with Jesse Chavez, and when you've got those two guys to mop up, options are obviously endless.
Talk about the Houston offense and attacking them, because going into the series, I was like, folks, that starting rotation's been a pinata, the bullpen's wrecked, all of this is going on, but they can still mash. And then I saw our bullpen go almost five innings last night, and that was welcome after how they've been pitching.
Yeah, that's the thing about being in the bullpen. I mentioned it with Aaron Bummer. When you've got a guy like Bummer who's going to rely on movement and contact, you're going to have to deal with a little bit of traffic, and you're going to have to deal with a few guys on base. But with the amount of ground balls that he's get, you very rarely see him get into trouble. And it's everybody in that bullpen has something that they can go to at any particular time to get you out. And it doesn't have to be anything that's going to jump off the page at you. Like Jesse Chavez has the ability to just dot his pitches on each corner, and he does it flawlessly. And when he doesn't do it is when he gets in trouble. You've got Bummer, who's got that sinker-slider combination that's just disgusting. You've got Iglesias that can get lefties or righties out. You've got Minter that seems to have incorporated that change-up a little bit more this year. So there is each guy, like the Rays, when the Rays were at their best, they have that one thing that you can rely on at any time to go to get somebody out. And not a lot of bullpens can say that.
Peter Moylan with Chuck and Chernoff on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. We were just going down some of the options and the depth in the Braves lineup, and we know it's sort of an embarrassment of riches that they're averaging 6.5 runs a game. And to this point, Ronald Acuna hasn't homered yet. And Austin Riley's only had a couple of bombs. And Sean Murphy's been out essentially for everything but an at-bat to start the year. It speaks to, like, Arcia. And Kelnick's off to the good start that he's off to. And Ozuna's on this tear that, as a pitcher, Peter, tell me how you would navigate it.
I wouldn't. Quite simply, I wouldn't be in there long enough to try and navigate this whole lineup. But if you are looking at it from the other side, you have to attack the bottom of the lineup. And then you see Orlando hitting 350 and you see Kelnick getting off the start that he has. You almost... It's a relief to get to the top of the lineup right now. And then Ozzy's hitting 350. So, you know, you look at Ronald's OPS, it's not as impressive as it was last year. And I mentioned that when your standard is the MVP, everything's going to look a little low compared to that. And when you look at our offense last year as the standard of what this lineup can do, when they're in this little lull, they're not firing right now, let's be honest. They're not the Braves that we're used to seeing, but they're getting enough from guys up and down that lineup to have that 10-5 record, which... Honestly, looking at it from a fan, it doesn't feel like we've played like a 10-5 team.
So this may just be anecdotal. Like, did this ever happen to you, or what do you do with this kid now? Last week, Framber gets hurt, and they go to this guy I'd never pitched before, Blair Henley. Hey, get to Houston. You're making your major league debut. He's like, when? Tonight. He faces 9 guys. He only gets one of them out. He hits a guy, couple of walks, 5 hits. It's just a disaster. Where do you go from there? Like, because that's his only major league experience now.
Well, he's going to go back down to AAA and figure it out. Obviously, we had this saying or this adage, I guess you'd call it, right the way up when I was. You'd have to prove yourself at the minor leagues, and then you don't want to bring someone up too quickly because you don't want to see them fail on this level. You're never going to know how they recover from that. But I think that's all changed. The ability for these guys to be able to shut off whatever happened yesterday and just move on is pretty incredible. And as a reliever, I've had to do it my whole life. You have a bad outing, you're going to get in there the next day, so you've got to be able to turn it around. So I think these athletes now, these kids, they're just built differently, and I don't think that's going to affect them at all. He'll go back down to AAA, have a little bit of success, and come back. Just like Jared Kelenic, you know, he's had a couple of goes at this and has failed in Seattle, and I think just like him, he's going to get comfortable and just be that player that he was all through the minor leagues.
Our friend Peter Moylan, you see him on Bally Sports doing Braves coverage. He's with Chuck and Chernoff on The Fan. Peter, for any pitcher who's gone through any type of an injury, whether you're out a month, 6 months, or a year like Spencer Strider, because I know move on and we focus on the team and he's isolated and doing rehab and trying to come back. How lonely is it? How much do you overthink? How much do you... is it frustration? Is it, like I said, just the ultimate sadness that I can't be a part of it for a guy like Strider, who is such a competitor? What is that like for somebody on the outside who's never experienced it?
It's all of those things wrapped into one. Even when you feel like you're doing the right thing and you're doing your rehab, and because a lot of the time you're doing your rehab during the day and then you'll go to the field at nighttime, so it's a long day. But even when you do show up, you're not able to contribute on the field at all. And there's only so much rah-rah you can do to try and feel like you're contributing on a nightly basis. So from that standpoint, it's so frustrating. And the only time you're ever going to get that back is when you get the chance to strap it on and go out there and compete it again. But for him, I mean, he's a pro at everything that he does. I feel like the reason he became the pitcher he is now is because of the first Tommy John that he had. He broke everything down and said, okay, I'm going to come back and be the best pitcher I can be. And he's done that. So I think... giving the 6, 8, 12 months, whatever it ends up being that he has off, I think he's going to use every second of it to be even better than he was when he got hurt.
Peter, we know the Braves, and we're sort of spoiled by the run of success. We'll be judged on all things postseason, right? You got to get there, and it's a long season.
Yeah.
But let's say the Braves do it again. They win their 96 or their 100 games, whatever it is, and they get to the postseason. Strider was one of the most open about talking about what had to be different, how they had to approach the postseason. There were thoughts, and we brought this up during the offseason, about tweaks to the game to try to make it more advantageous for the higher seed.
How is it going to change where the Braves, the Dodgers, these teams with the week off and the better records regain the advantage?
That's such a good question. I don't honestly know. It's almost like, how do we avoid the injuries? I don't know how to avoid injuries either, but that is a scenario that we've seen play out the last couple of times. How do you stop the hot team from getting hot in September and running away with it? You just can't. You just got to hope that nobody falls into that lull, short of maybe shortening the gap in between for that wild card round. But again, that wild card round's become so interesting and so exciting that you don't want to make that any shorter either. So it is a problem that we've had to face the last couple of years. But if I had the answer, I wouldn't be talking to you. I'd probably be working for a big league team right now and just working out how to do that. But it's just frustrating because at the end of the year, you want the big guns. You want the guys that have done it all year. But when you play 162, it doesn't always work out like that.
So we'll end with what you just alluded to, not having an answer to the injury stuff. I read a quote to the audience from Dr. James Andrews, who said he's convinced the injuries we're seeing now starts at 14, 15, 16. Guys redlining it. Guys velo and spin too early, and there's only so many bullets in that gun in the elbow. That seems like the start of it. I don't know how you stop it because nobody's going to want to take some miles off the fastball. You're going to try to impress
including
scouts.
Teams.
Right, exactly.
Well, including teams. To go to their minor leagues and say, hey, guys, need to turn it down. Let's go. We need to sit 88 to 91 for a few weeks.
Well, that's why, Darius Vines isn't a top 10 Braves prospect, right? I mean, there's a reason why Hurston Waldrop and A.J. Smith-Shawver are. So if not a solution to it, Peter, what do we do to slow down the curve on injuries?
Mm. You're talking to a guy that's had two Tommy Johns, three shoulders, and three backs. So I don't know, clearly. But I think you're right. It's the full bore from the age of 12. It's the sixth pitch mix that your under 15 kid has. I signed throwing 84. And I know it was 1960 or whatever the hell it was, but I was throwing 84 miles an hour and I developed my arm strength once I got over here. I guess teams aren't as patient as they were back in the day. I never played baseball through high school. I played once a weekend. So there is no formula to avoid injury. It's just, you just have to do all that you can, obviously, strength-wise, flexibility-wise. You hear Pedro talk. Pedro never did weights, but Pedro was 165 pounds. Things change. There's going to be guys out there that are going to have to make adjustments. Otherwise, this is just going to keep happening. But at the same time, teams need to make adjustments from within.
Moylan, before we let you go, I don't think we've ever gotten to the bottom of the controversy of what happened with you in the radio booth with Ben Ingram. That moment right there, which I don't know. I heard rumors of a chair movement or Jonathan Chadwick blowing his nose or other things that happened. And our belief is, I mean, you just farted on air.
Look, I'll take it. I don't care. You can blame me for that. I'll be the fart guy from now on. That's fine.
So you're not denying, though.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys that I know every bowel movement that I have throughout the course of the game.
Wow.
And if one happened to slip out, and I apologize to everybody, and I'll accept responsibility, but I don't remember it.
All
right, we cracked the case. Yeah, we did it. Peter Moylan, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Continue the good work on Bally. We'd love to have you on again. Thank you, my friend.
I'll be on whenever you'll have me. See you, boys.
There he is, Peter Moylan, well-dressed man, who admitted to the fault there on the radio. We got to the bottom. I think we can officially close up that case on Fartgate. Pretty clear what happened to me. All right, coming up, you're going to hear three very different hot takes that will all make some sense, or they'll just make you laugh instead. Either way, you'll enjoy it. You'll hear them next. Chuck and Chernoff are with you guys, and you're with us. We're all together until about 6:10 tonight. Little bonus. Chuck and Chernoff before 6:80 game day with Chris Domino and Kevin McAlpin come your way. And then it's the Ford leadoff show before the Braves and the Astros. 8:10, first pitch tonight on The Fan on FM at 93.7, on AM at 6:80, and of course on that 6:80 The Fan mobile app. Now, before we get to unfinished business, usually closing up some loops on things we just did not finish up throughout the show, I wanted to play you a couple of pieces of sound, Charles, and for the audience, to just get the reaction, because they're a couple of our favorite people. Chris Mad Dog Russo, on his radio show on Sirius XM, talked about attending the Masters in Augusta and getting a chance to hobnob and get on the green and be around the caddies. And he made it clear the one thing he was asked to do most when he was in Augusta was this.
And then the caddies, when I was working on my putts, all they cared about, keep on giving Stephen A. shit. Hate in front of the hour. We continue.
He was so proud of it. That's all they wanted him to do. Mad Dog, just keep twisting the knife on Stephen A. And the word he used there was rather appropriate, because Stephen A. on his podcast, the Stephen A. Smith Show, takes questions. Any questions, Q&As from the audience.
We played some good ones.
We have played some good ones. I don't know if this is a good or bad one and why anybody would think of this question, but here it is to Stephen A.
What's the smallest amount of money you would reach into a toilet to get? Into a toilet? Well, if it's a toilet with clear water, $100, something like that. If it's shit in there.
Oh, God.
I mean, it would have to be more than that. But I will say this. If it's mine, I'll get over it. If it's somebody else's poop, I don't know how much amount of money I'm willing to do that. I can't recover from that. I'm just sorry. That's just how I roll. I don't know about that one.
Why would somebody ask that question? Why would that be on your mind?
Okay, I said we've asked some good ones. We've played a variety of questions, I'll say. And this brackets it now. This extends the wide range. This makes it wider.
But this is why Stephen A. is so great. He'll answer that question. The same way he'll answer a question about politics.
What do you want on a sub? It doesn't matter. He just starts stealing his information.
And his audience comes up with questions that I've never thought, how much would I stick my hand in that pot for? What amount of money would it be? What's too small?
I think the best question so far is the one, give me the hunter and the 10,000 rats. Like, yeah. That's
10,000 rats.
That's the one.
I'm going to reset that one. That was, would you rather have?
These 8 or 9 things, you get to choose 2 to take off the board. Like, 2 that's not, 2 on your side. And so, basically, you had to have the hunter and the 10,000. It was a fantastic question.
But it was, who could you survive an hour with? And it was like 10,000 rats. It was like a guy with a shotgun. It was like all these different things.
Couple grizzly bears, right. Crocodiles.
Their audience, very creative. I hope our audience, if we ask for Q&As. Now, I will say our audience does a great job when we ask the PD. They've never once asked the PD how much he would stick his hand in a pot for in the turlet. A certain amount of money.
Well, so. How much is in there? Matt's going to get a text. Matt is going to get a text.
For the people who can't distinguish your voice from my voice, and that happens a lot, I hear, because our voices are so similar.
I don't know. There's probably going to be social media buzz, a little undercurrent about what Matt just did.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.